Hello, and welcome to the Weekly Comic Spotlight on the Comic Book Page podcast. My name is John Mayo.
And I'm Bob Bretall. In this episode, we'll be discussing recently released comics. One from DC, one from Marvel, and at least one other. As always, we'll keep major spoilers to a minimum, but we'll discuss general plot points and storylines of the comics we review.
This is Weekly Comic Spotlight 268 for comics originally released on September 26, 2012. Now, starting us off in DC is Talon number one, or actually number zero, because it's the end of the zero month. This month, you know, as I think we've talked about before, DC kind of sort of double dipped on ongoing titles. This week also had, I think it was Voodoo number zero, which was the last issue of that series. So the four titles that ended showed up in this month, and the four titles that are replacing them also showed up in this month. And of course, Talon is one of the Wave 3 titles. Now, you decided to pass on this one, right?
Yeah, I mean, I didn't buy any of, well, this is a new one, right? So on this one, my thing was, unlike everybody else, it seems, who loved The Court of the Owls, and, you know, Batman's one of the top-selling books for DC, I really didn't care for The Court of the Owls at all. And since the Talon character is spinning out of The Court of the Owls, and I was relatively unenthused with that character and that storyline, I didn't think that I wanted to pick up a series about him.
Well, of course, I mean, there's a whole spectrum of, you know, how people could feel about The Court of Owls. I basically accept them. I'm not going to say I'm overjoyed by them or think they're brilliant, but I don't despise them either. And while the Talons have indeed been introduced in those storylines, Calvin Rose, the star of this series, new character. We have not seen him in the, like, the Night of the Owls and stuff like that. I think a lot of people were expecting initially, before they gave too much information on this, that it might have been Nightwing's grandfather, or great-grandfather, one of the two, who had been a Talon in the Night of the Owls stuff. Maybe he would take this title. But this is Calvin Rose, and it's interesting because the solicitation is a bit misleading. It's about, you know, a new series featuring the Court of Owls' unstoppable killing machine. Meet Calvin Rose, the only Talon ever to escape the grasp of the Court of Owls. This former assassin just wants to live a normal life, but that's impossible because he's being hunted by his former masters. It's like, okay, that's actually not a bad pitch for a comic or for a title or for, you know, an issue, whatever. Except it quickly becomes apparent Calvin Rose is not an assassin. Yes, he did murder the previous Talon because apparently, you know, much like in the Mirror Universe, that's how one gets jobs. They were very careful, I think, not to set him up as just a cold-blooded killing machine. Because if you're trying to insert another character into the Batman mythos in that corner of the DC universe, having a cold-blooded killer, not going to go over too well with Batman and his friends. So I think they made the right choice there. And this issue is set, you know, like most of the Zero issues, in the past, giving this character's backstory. Obviously, there's a heavy aspect of the Court of Owls in the story, because, you know, it's part and parcel of the character. What I found interesting is, because of that, you know, it fits it into the Batman corner of the universe, but it's not like a lot of these other new characters that are just, you know, Batwing, his origin is tied heavily to Bruce Wayne. You could argue, you know, obviously Batgirl, Batwoman, and a lot of these others. What I found interesting is instead of going with a strong Batman connection, like many of the other Talons, this guy, Calvin Rose, is tied into the Haley Circus. And this gives him more in common with Nightwing than Batman. And overall, after reading the series, you know, I was a little, you know, apprehensive as to, you know, do we really need yet another Batman family title? And is a Talon really the great thing to have as the focal character? This character, I think, is going to fit in fairly well with the Batman family. I'm curious how he's going to react and interact with various ones, you know, particularly Batman and Nightwing, but some of the others as well. I think there's a lot they could do with this character. They set him up as a reasonably likable character, all things considered. They give him skill sets that made him a reasonably logical choice, although a bit of an offbeat one for a Talon. And skills that are not directly, you know, massively overlapping with most of the other characters. In other words, he's not another acrobat you know, but he did, you know, work at the circus. So, you know, I don't want to give away his skill set, because I think it was an interesting thing for them to choose. But it made sense. It works. One of the things I found very interesting about this issue is I went back and counted the pages because I could divide the thing not, well, actually it turned out evenly in half because 10 pages fit this, 10 didn't. Only half the pages have word balloons. The other half have captions. And this comic was heavily narrated with captions, almost like a voiceover thing, with Calvin kind of recounting his history. And typically that doesn't work too well for me because I feel like I'm getting told the story, not shown the story. But the images they chose fit well with the captions, and it still felt like I was being shown the story. And by using the captions, I was able to get some insights that I otherwise probably would not have been able to get. But it made the issue feel a lot more wordy than a lot of comics tend to. So, you know, for somebody, you know, like yourself, who's a big not fan of the Court of Owls, obviously this is going to be a hard sell. I don't know that I would suggest it to you at all.
Yeah, and I mean, I don't read Nightwing either, so...
Well, you don't have to.
No, I understand, but I've been trying to limit my Batman family intake. That was another part of it, you know. It's a no-brainer if you get a lot of stuff, or if you like all the Batman titles and you want another one. I mean, right now I'm down to getting Batman, Batman Incorporated, and that was it, although I'm adding Detective when John Layman starts doing it. And I'm getting Batwoman, but, you know, I've dropped Nightwing, I've dropped Batgirl, I've dropped Birds of Prey, and the other, you know, seemingly four or five Batman titles that there are, but maybe there's a couple fewer.
Let's see, there's Legend, there's Dark Knight, there's Batman and Robin, there's quite a few. You know, Batwing, you could argue if Birds of Prey is part of that corner of the universe or not. But, I mean, the point is, at this point, you're looking for titles to drop, not titles to add. So it has to be something that really hits your sweet spot for it to be worth recommending to you. And since I know the Court of Owls is distinctly not in there, you know, this would have had to be absolutely, completely brilliant, one of the best comics I've ever read, for me to say, yeah, I know you hate the Court of Owls, try this anyways. This was really good. Do I think it was up to that unbelievably exceptional level for me to say, gosh, Bob, you should try it? No.
Yeah, but, I mean, and I tried some of the Zero issues, and I liked the ones, you know, I liked Phantom Stranger, I liked Sword of Sorcery. Those were different-ish, you know. Mm-hmm. So, this one, you know, again, I'm sure there's nothing wrong. You know, you said, hey, it's a good story. So especially people, you know, there are a lot of people who really loved the Court of Owls story. There are a lot of people who really love the entire Batman corner of the DC Universe. These are people that this book seems to be targeted at.
What I like, though, is not only is it targeted at that, it's done in a fairly respectful manner, not just trying to do a cash grab. I think they did a good job setting up this character and his backstory in this Zero issue. I'm looking forward to seeing where it picks up current day with the first issue. And it's not like, well, you like Batman, let's do an 18th Batman title starring Batman yet again, or, you know, something like that. They're trying to actually expand the mythos a bit. They did a good job. It ties into the events that have been happening with the Court of Owls, but not, wow, if you didn't read this story, you're going to be totally lost. I mean, if you don't know about the Haley Circus, everything you need to know about it from Talon's perspective is in here. If you happen to know, you know, Nightwing's history with that circus, it's an added bonus. And that's part of why I would like to see those two interact and see what happens. Overall, I was very pleased with this. It was very good. I would say it's a 4 out of 5. It's something I would definitely recommend to people who like the Court of Owls and who are looking for another good Batman title, because I think they did a really good job with this.
Very good.
All right, moving on to our Marvel book. It is The Incredible Hulk number 14. Now, this is the second of a three-part story. Now you didn't pick this up. You haven't been picking up the Hulk for a while, correct?
I stopped when Wills Portacio was on it. I think I read the first issue, maybe the first two issues, with him being Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde on the island of Dr. Moreau.
Right.
I picked up an issue when the Stay Angry storyline came around, because I heard a lot of people talking about how much they loved that. I was somewhat unenthused by the bald Hulk drawn by Steve Dillon. I like Dillon's art in many circumstances, but it's kind of a situational thing. I didn't like him doing bald Hulk, so it just it tweaked me wrong. So I didn't keep getting it.
I can see that. The basic take that Jason Aaron's had on this run, this volume, is you've got Banner, you've got the Hulk, you've got a man, you've got a monster, but the monster is actually Banner. He's the nutso one who's you know, just shouldn't be let loose. And that was kind of the twist he had on it. And the whole opening arc with the Island of Dr. Moreau stuff I thought was a bit ludicrous, wasn't in favor of the art or whatever. But it had some interesting twists, like, again, the flip side of who's the monster, who's not. With the Stay Angry, I thought they really took that concept and ran with it in some fairly interesting directions. I would say up to the level that Peter David's run was at, where he would routinely, you know, say, well, you know, if this is the premise of the series, and it is, what about this? And put a clever, interesting, you know, variation on the theme. And with the Stay Angry, I mean, typically a Hulk story is Banner being afraid he's going to turn into the Hulk. With Stay Angry, the Hulk was afraid he was going to turn into Banner. It was told from the Hulk's perspective. So it was a classic Hulk story with the role reversal, which I thought was really clever and very entertaining and well done. And that led into this story arc of Hulk United, which started last issue. And the previous issue really sets up essentially the new status quo, which I think they're going to be, you know, I think this entire story arc is setting up the Indestructible Hulk series. Because, Banner and the Hulk come to terms, essentially, and start, you know, instead of fighting each other, working together. And it makes for, I mean, it's not the first time that's happened, but it makes for a fun dynamic, a different dynamic, and one that I'm really excited to see what Mark Waid does with the Indestructible Hulk series. There were a few aspects of this storyline so far, particularly this issue, that I didn't really notice last issue, that didn't work particularly great for me. Specifically, at the beginning of this volume, it was Dr. Doom that had kind of split the two, so Doom's been a major factor in this series. And in this issue, we get a lot of Doom bots, which I'm okay with. They're classic aspects of Dr. Doom. I love that stuff. But these Doom bots are practically neurotic. Gee, we haven't heard from Doom. Let's check the phone line, make sure it's okay. I mean, there's an almost Seinfeldian aspect of these robots that, it's being played for comedy, and I get that, but it almost seemed out of character and running counter to the point of the story and the Dr. Doom and the characters. There was an aspect where we see inside kind of the Hulk and Bruce Banner's mind of, you know, how they control the body and stuff like that, which kind of interesting, kind of wacky. It's like, I mean, I get what they were going for, but not a highlight of the issue for me. Overall, though, they're doing some fun stuff with how Banner and the Hulk interact and are trying to cooperate, even though it's very much a dichotomy of brains versus brawn, and you can argue which one's using the brute force solution at times. This is very much a middle chapter of a story. You know, if you're going to read this, I would recommend reading 13 and reading 15 to get the full picture. As a middle chapter goes, I think they did a good job, but really that previous issue is what sets up the new status quo and is kind of taken almost as just completely given here. And then, of course, the next issue is going to resolve the whole storyline.
And so, then it's going to start over with the Waid run, right? Is that just two issues to go?
One more after this, and then Mark Waid.
Okay, yeah. So, I mean, at this point, I'm kind of like, I'm going to try out the Waid run on the Hulk, so I'm kind of crossing my fingers. You know, that'll be something that'll really hit me a good way. Because, I mean, Waid, almost everything Waid's ever written has I've really enjoyed. I can't say he has a perfect track record with me, but it's pretty darn close. So we'll see. I'm really looking forward to Indestructible Hulk, mostly because his name's attached to it.
Yeah, well, same here. And I was a little surprised that they were using this story arc to kind of set the stage and the status quo for that. So anyone who's expecting to read the Mark Waid stuff and get the, well, how do they start working together story, well, guess what? They're telling it right now. Now, that having been said, and I know you're getting Indestructible Hulk to try that out, I don't know that I would recommend this story arc to you specifically because I don't know that the art style would click with you, given your comments a few minutes ago about the Bald Hulk and I forget which artist you were saying was doing that just didn't click with the Stay Angry stuff.
That was Steve Dillon, I think.
Yeah.
Who's doing this one?
Jeff Palo or Hefte Palo.
Okay, I am unfamiliar with his work. I'm sure I've seen it somewhere.
It's fine. I'm not going to say it's great. It's not horrible, but the way they portray the Hulk, I don't know that would work with you.
I think he grew some hair before Waid got a hold of him. I seem to recall there being hair in the promotional images.
Well, yet another reason to read number 15 then.
Huh.
In the Dreamscape or the Mindscape or whatever, he's got hair. Outside of it, he does not.
Interesting.
So, well, it's self-image. You know,
I'm going to give Waid the credit that he will bring me up to speed on everything I need to know because it's a number one issue. I know that has been something that has not always been true of number one issues.
But it's usually been true of ones by Waid. He's usually pretty
correct.
Good about that.
Yes, he understands what typically is necessary, you know, in any kind of an issue of a comic that he's drawing. So I have great hopes there.
Well, and the question is, do you need to understand anything other than the fact the two are now working in tandem? You know, the fact that they're not at cross purposes should be enough. You shouldn't need to know how, why, and the full backstory of what led to that. I mean, to a degree, that's going to be part of the premise of the Indestructible Hulk series. Those two are now, you know, cooperating versus fighting. So I don't know that Waid necessarily will need to recap this story arc or anything from this volume, provided he clearly sets the stage believably that those two are working together.
So, I mean, don't answer this if it's a spoiler, but, I mean, we have Banner and we have the Hulk. I mean, are they two separate entities, or is it just that the one that's, like, dormant at any given time is active in the other guy's mind or something? I mean, do we actually physically have two guys running around?
I'm debating if answering that's a spoiler
okay, so,
or not.
So don't answer it then. I mean, it seemed like they were more two guys, but again, I'm sure
I'm
going to
say
Waid
it's not a spoiler because, well, it's not a spoiler for this story. I don't think it should be a spoiler for the next. Arguably, it could be considered one for the Stay Angry. So if you're in the middle of that, or the beginning of that, then this would be a spoiler. But no, there's one body. At the end of the Dr. Moreau storyline, that arc where Banner had just gone, you know, kind of nuts with the science experiments on the island, a gamma bomb was exploded, which pretty much vaporized Bruce Banner. And somehow, magically, his consciousness got, re-imprinted or whatever into the Hulk. So throughout the entire Stay Angry, as I alluded to earlier, where the Hulk was afraid he would turn into Banner.
Right, which is, that was what kind of got me onto that question, because, so I guess during the first few issues, there were two separate ones?
Yes. At the end of Fear Itself, we saw Bruce Banner basically lying somewhere, seeing the Hulk jump off, and it's like, where did you go? How did you get out? You know, how do you have another body? In that first story arc or whatever, earlier in this volume of Incredible Hulk, Dr. Doom, you know, was the explanation as to how they separated.
Okay.
Essentially, he scooped out that part of the brain, grew it a new body.
Okay, I'm keeping myself a scorecard here.
Well, this is not the first time the two have been separated or the first time they've been merged.
I'm sure it won't be the last.
No, probably not. What I think would be funny would be to clone the Banner Hulk character, but have it somehow such that the gamma radiation kind of flows from one to the other, so one's always Banner, one's always the Hulk, but it's, you know, flips. So I don't know, I think that could be fun. Overall, I thought this was a good story arc. You know, again, I like how they're playing with the status quo, trying to evolve it, yet stay true to the concept of it. I'm looking forward to seeing how the next issue resolves this storyline and the series, and again, sets up the Indestructible Hulk series, which I'm very much looking forward to. I would give this a solid 4 out of 5. It was a good comic.
Very good.
So, shall we move on to our other comic, which is Rachel Rising 11?
Sure.
What did you think of this one?
I've been really liking this series. Now, a couple of issues ago, it's the Terry Moore gig, you know, from
the royal we kind of thing.
Royal, you know, the royal they or something, you know. But Terry is like, you know, as far as we can tell, I mean, he's doing the lettering, the story, the art, you know, the whole thing. He's probably got some help on the production. But, you know, for the first 7 or 8 issues, we kind of, you know, okay, Rachel came back from the dead. What's going on? You know, and then he really had a big reveal and, you know, it was just, okay, there's these mystical forces and, you know, since then things have really amped up a lot, I think. In this one, as Rachel has the conversation with this other woman whose name eludes me, if they've in fact given her a name, Lilith, there's just a lot of backstory here, and it makes some decent sense. But, you know, we have a really cool building here of the what I'll characterize as the forces of good, characterized by Rachel, and the forces of, let's call it evil, or at least not so good, but I think evil is pretty precise, you know, with Lilith and the force that's inhabiting Jet, and, you know, it looks like things, you know, things have built and are going to come to a head at some point. I mean, this will be a limited book, much like Echo, right? So I don't remember if Terry Moore has yet stated how long he plans for this to go on. I mean, Echo went how long? Like 28 some odd issues, 30
Sounds
issues?
About right.
Somewhere around there. So certainly nowhere near as long as Strangers in Paradise went. And I don't know how long he's planning on keeping this one going. But it's really nice that he's been doing these very different kinds of series, and they have a very definite story arc to them. I mean, they're quote-unquote ongoing series, right? They're not mini-series, but, I mean, they're ongoing to the point that he tells the story that he set out to tell. And then he's done, and there you have this piece of fiction. And then he'll move on to the next one. I've not been disappointed by his work yet, and he does a really good job. Now, this particular issue, again, the specifics of what's going on, it's kind of hard to talk about it without giving certain things away. And this is also the kind of a series that someone who's not reading it, it's not something that I would suggest jumping into the middle of. I mean, it's not like, oh, go pick up issue number 11. It's a really great issue, you know, or issue 9 or whatever. It's more like, well, if this sounds like a very cool, if you hear us talking enthusiastically about it, or at least me, you know, and you want to try it out, you know, go get the first trade paperback, you know, or, you know, try to pick up the issues and start from the beginning.
Let me jump in here for a minute, because I think what you just said there sums up a lot of kind of my feelings, both on this issue and kind of the series in general. I mean, I like the series, but frankly, I'm at the point where I'm ready for it to start to wind up. And it's not that the series is bad. It isn't. It's that the series is a single story. And the problem I'm having with this series is that I'm literally getting a chapter of the story per issue. So it'd be like saying, wow, this is a really great TV show. You know, you should watch, you know, the 8:30 to 8:40 section of last night's episode. It's like, well, that's kind of an odd little tiny slice of it. You're not going to get a full chunk. You're not going to really know what's going on. Just like we wouldn't say, wow, this is great, go read issue 11, and just issue 11. You need the bigger context. And there is no previously in page. The story continues pretty much where it left off, as if I had just read the previous chapter of the story. Now, when this gets collected, that's going to flow great, and it's going to be a very solid story that way. But there is an assumption of story momentum that I simply don't have with this series. And the series has pretty much been coming out every month like clockwork, you know, give or take a week or something, you know, like this. I mean, it's not like it's late or anything that Terry Moore's doing. It's that, for me, just enough time is passing between issues. I've had just enough going on in my life, just enough other comics I've read, that I have a little bit of a problem getting back into the story cold. Because, I mean, this issue starts out, and you've got, you know, a woodland scene, it's snowing, two ladies walking and talking. And just, boom, we're back into the story. And, you know, you've got to kind of, there's not enough clues as to, oh, now where did this leave off? Why are these two out here? What are they talking about? Who are they again? You know, that kind of a thing. It's a black and white comic, so there's no color to help me remember, oh, the one in the blue top, that's so-and-so or whatever. And there are storytelling shortcuts that in a color comic could be used, in a superhero comic just with the costumes could be used, that I don't want to say a more realistic, I mean, this is dealing with people coming back from the dead, but a more, less superheroic, less fantasy-ish kind of a thing doesn't have as tools to use. And, you know, each issue kind of starts up as if it's coming back from a commercial break, not as if it's a new TV episode, to continue with that analogy. All of that having been said, this is a solid story. It's a bit more of a horror series than I tend to really, you know, get into. But
it's done in a not horrific way, right? It's got that suspense, and it has the horror involved in kind of keeping you on the edge of your seat, you know, as it were, for the different parts. And, you know, there's creepy stuff without being in your face gory about stuff. You
it's
know, there's
more of a suspense sort of a story, supernatural kind of a story than a flat out horror story. It's certainly not a, you know, some crazed killer with a chainsaw kind of a horror story.
Yeah. And he's not going for the horror shock by just grossing you out, you know, page after page with viscera, necessarily. You know, it's, you know, there are little elements of it, like with the rabbits, but that was very subtly done, right?
Yeah, it's not a gore fest by any stretch of the imagination.
Which I appreciate it when certain authors who have a great ability to tell that kind of a story, you know, they really show that you can tell a really creepy, you know, horror story without falling back on the gore. Although, you know, that other subgenre of horror has its place too, because some people, I know you're not one of them, but, you know, some people are like, ooh, you know, ah, I was grossed out by that. That was cool, you know. So, you know, each one has its place.
Yeah, totally.
But this is certainly in the camp of, you know, we're not going for the shock of the image. We're going for the shock of the story.
Yes, and it's all about the story. And again, the story singular, one story for the entire title. And whereas most comic titles, six issues, boom, you're on to another story. You know, and I love the fact that Terry Moore is doing everything in here. It gives it a cohesiveness and a singular vision that comics done, I'm going to say by committee, although that's a little harsh, because sometimes the committee is an artist and a writer. But the fact that this is a single vision, I think, really strengthens it. I like what Terry Moore is capable of doing. This story is just not clicking with me in the monthly format as much as I would like it to, which is part of why I'm ready for it to wind up. I want to see him go do something else. Echo clicked with me enough more than this that it had better story momentum for me, although it, too, had the we're just telling a chapter in the story aspect. I think if there was something inside the front cover, or previously in, or let's get you back up to speed, or something, that might help, you know, keep these titles a bit more accessible. And it's something that would easily just not be in a trade where it would get in the way.
Yeah, I agree with that. You know, I'm a big fan of the inside the front cover recap of, you know, what has gone before, and maybe having something either there or in the back that kind of introduces you to some of the characters and stuff. Because, you know, when you're publishing serial fiction like this, not only, even though it's not the optimal way to read a book, it would be cool if somebody could pick up the book, read that, be able to get in the story, at least have a better understanding of what's going on, and then say, ah, I'm going to now go back and buy all these, you know, back issues or look for the trades or whatever.
You know what would be an interesting approach to the previously in kind of a thing, particularly for something like a Terry Moore book or The Sword by the Luna Brothers or something else that's just a really one long story told over the thing, is if inside the front cover, what they did is essentially reprint the last couple of pages of the previous issue. Because sometimes just looking at it, boom, oh, I remember exactly where we left off, now I'm back into the story.
Yeah.
But enough to get that last scene to more than just jog your memory, but to kind of replay it for you.
You know what I was thinking as you were going into that, what might be another way of doing it is just very simply in the inside of the front cover, put a URL and say, to learn more about the world and backstory of Rachel Rising, visit, you know, terrymoore.com/Rachel Rising or something like that.
I think that would be a good idea as well.
Yeah.
But in addition to something else.
Mind you, yeah. But, you know, I don't know why people don't do that even, because, I mean, pretty much everybody's got a computer or something at this point, you know, or even you could go to the library and log on a computer at the library or something. I mean, you could go to a website and say, ah, you know, okay, Rachel, here's the deal, you know, Jet, et cetera.
Let me give you a couple of reasons why I might be hesitant to do that if I were a creator. One, spoilers. If I were doing this, I would want to have something for like a Rachel Rising to where the website viewer could say, well, I want to know as of issue 6, as of issue 10, as of issue 12 or whatever. So I can get up to speed of where I left off on the series and not have the issue I'm about to read just told to me. Okay, so there's the whole spoiler aspect. But if you've got enough information to really get somebody up to speed on, say, the last 10 issues, since we're talking about issue 11 here, why would they then need to go read the 10 issues versus just go and reading that recap? So you got to wonder what impact it might have on sales.
Well, I'm not necessarily looking for a recap. I'm just more looking for even if it's just the first, you know, kind of premise of the world, premise of the story, and guide to the characters. But I can understand how, I mean, you can find that on Wikipedia anyway, right?
Yeah. So. Yeah. Well, and I'll admit, there have been a couple of times when we're going to be talking about something where, you know, whether I'm familiar with the stuff or not, sometimes I'll pull up the Wikipedia page. I did that with, like, the Avengers Steven Peel stuff, because I'm not familiar with it. Other times, it's just I need a memory jog of who is this character again, or I want to know, you know, how something is getting portrayed on Wikipedia and whether I think it's accurate or not. So that can be a huge, resource for getting up to speed on something and just learning more about, be it a creator, a character, a title, what have you. There are a couple of times where it's woefully inadequate as to, I did that with the Beowulf backup feature, I guess last week, just to see how Wikipedia was kind of presenting the revised version. And it was, yeah, it exists. So, I mean, you know, Wikipedia, give it time and stuff, but it's a great resource for this kind of stuff. Personally, like you said, Rachel Rising, if you haven't been reading it yet, pick it up and trade, read the entire story stem to stern. This is not one, I mean, you wouldn't go pick up a novel at the bookstore and then start, you know, 100 pages in. That just is silly. Why would you do that? Same kind of a thing with this type of storytelling. Does that mean they're writing it for the trade? No. Would that mean, well, technically yes, but really what it means is some of these titles by the more creator-owned quadrant are telling a single epic saga. Maybe it's a mini-series, maybe it's a longer series like Rachel Rising, Echo, The Girls, Sword, by the Luna Brothers, stuff like that. And you don't have arcs, you don't have, you know, compartmentalized beginning, middle, ends, because it's one big thing. And that's great. I love that because it gives a different pacing of story, a different size of story than you can tell in a typical Marvel or DC or something where it's in and out in 6 issues kind of a deal. So, to me, the issues I'm having with Rachel Rising are not with the content. It's with the fact that I'm reading it monthly, and for me, it's not as sticky of a story as I would like it to be. So, I like this. I'm not going to recommend against it at any means. Certainly, if you pick it up, start at the beginning of the story. Trades are a great way to go. Terry Moore, very talented writer and artist. Look forward to seeing what he does next. For me, I'm going to give this a 3 out of 5.
Oh, interesting. For me, I have really been enjoying the series. I mean, this issue, I'll give a 4 out of 5. I really liked it. I particularly liked the scene with Jet in the hospital. I just thought that was very creepy, and especially kind of the ending of it.
I liked the bit with the cup of water.
Yeah, exactly. You know, I thought this was a very, very strong issue, very revealing issue. The series as a whole, I'm leaning in the 5 out of 5 range, and you know, we'll see when it all ends. You know, if it sticks to that. But this is a really well done series, really well done effort by Terry Moore.
Cool.
So, has there been other things that you've read this week? I've read a couple of new things that came out, and a couple of things I didn't get to yet that I'm looking forward to reading today. There was a new indie book called Westward, number one, that came out that is a very, very cool futuristic story. It's black and white. Took a little getting into the art style, but it worked for me after. It was a very thick issue, too, for $2.99. It had to have been at least 40 pages. Happy, number one, by Grant Morrison. It was pretty good. I liked that quite a lot. The Finder Talisman hardcover came out. I have not read that yet. I did read Idolized. I like that.
That was good.
I like that. I really enjoy that series. I think... doing a really good job on that. Book from Image called Debris. It's a 4-issue series. Issue 3 came out. I liked that quite a bit. Mind Management by Matt Kent continues to please. The Goon, another good issue of that. Ozymandias, number 3, was out. I liked that issue. The Joe Kubert Artist Edition came out, the regular one. With him doing Tarzan of the Apes. Mm-hmm. You know, that Joe Kubert is, you know, passed away recently. The man is a fabulous artist. You know, being able to see giant, you know, original art reproductions of his. I mean, they're reproductions, but these artist editions, you know, just being able to see, if you're not someone who's ever owned original art, I mean, original art can be kind of pricey. But the artist editions that IDW does, you know, being able to get, you know, 100+ pages of sequential stories, you know, with all the original art and being able to look at that, it's amazing. You know, it's something that you'd know. I'd never be able to buy that, you know, the real stuff. Yeah. Anyway, Elephant Men 43, very good. What else came out? The new issue of Spider-Man. You know, it was okay. I thought that they tied up that Alpha storyline a little bit easily.
Yeah.
You know, it was like, it was okay. But you know, we talked about when they started it, you know, we reviewed that issue, I believe. And
yes, we did.
It was the way that they set that character up. I mean, it would have been really hard to end it some other way other than by somehow killing the kid or something, but I don't know. Winter Soldier, great series, very well done. I didn't make it to all the DC Zero issues yet.
I've been going through those. Most of them have been pretty good. There are a few where I was expecting to get something a little different than I got, specifically with the Teen Titans. I was expecting to get... Bunker and Skidder, whatever, their origin, and they like show up as a cameo at best. But I've been enjoying the Zero Issue stuff. I am expecting at this point to see another theme month at some point from DC. What that theme would be, don't know, but I think the Zero Issues are doing well enough for them that they'll try to replicate that success maybe on a once-a-year basis. I don't know. I also read Hero Worship from Avatar, third issue of that. Really enjoying that series. It's fun stuff. Yeah, I've read a bunch of other stuff this week. Most of it was just good. It continues to surprise me, annoy me, that they'll put, you know, 2 or 3, you know, X-Men books out in a given week or something like that. I don't get why these publishers aren't kind of spreading some of their stuff around the shipping weeks a little bit more evenly.
When you put out 12 X-Men titles you have to put out, two or three a week. How many X-Men titles are there? I don't know anymore.
I've lost count.
There's a lot, right?
Yeah. But, like, I mean, do you want to put out, going towards the shipment I just got last night, like Avengers versus X-Men the same week as the AVX versus or something? You know, why wouldn't you have those staggered by 2 weeks? Sticking within this week, what did they have that was kind of duplicated? Let's see, we had Extreme X-Men, X-Men Legacy, X-Men. I think we also had Astonishing X-Men. It's just, it's crazy. So, yeah, Astonishing. Plus Gambit, plus, I mean, we had Punisher and Space Punisher in the same week.
Well, that's, yeah.
That's just silly.
They could spread those out a little bit.
Yeah. I continue to not be a fan of the random ordered, or unalphabetical, I should say, DCBS packing lists.
Yeah, that's very irritating. I don't know what changed in their system.
I emailed them about it, and they changed it to where it was more efficient for them for pulling the books and shipping the books. And I'm all for the more efficiency on their part. I completely get that. But the lack of a subtotal at the bottom means I can't go compare it to what I think I should have gotten and just check off the things on my list easily. And, you know, getting the stuff in the random order, both in the actual way the books are shipped and on the list, really surprisingly slows down how long it takes for me to check off, you know, what I get every week. I keep an Excel file that's got essentially everything from the Excel files I send in as my order. And then every week, just, you know, check off. It's like, okay, this is from this shipment, so I know what I still have, you know, on order. And having to bounce around from Talon to Aquaman to Flash to Savage Hawkman to, you know, Firestorm to Superman to Batman Incorporated. I'm just bouncing up and down the list all the time. It's crazy.
Yeah, I mean, they appear to be in order by product code.
They are not. July, May, June.
Well,
at least on my list.
Well, I have something from July at the top of my list, but it's a weird thing. It's like the Boom mini bundle. And once I come out of that, it goes May, and then they're in order, then June, and then they're in order, and then a whole bunch of July ones
yeah.
that are in order.
Well, again, they're doing it for their efficiency, and I get that.
So, I mean, other than a couple of outliers at the top of the list, they do all appear, at least on my list, to be in order by the product code.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, that just means that they're just like completely random by, you know, actual book. So I have to just sit there when I get them out of the DCBS box. And, well, it's a pain because, well, I mean, I have to go through it twice, right? I have to go through it once in the order that they're on the list just to make sure I got everything on the shipping list. And then I have to alphabetize them and go through them to check them off of my records, which are kept in alphabetical order.
Well, what I've taken to doing is I'll filter my list to what should have shipped. I will then start at the bottom. It's like, oh, Voodoo. Let's go find Voodoo in the stack. Check that off. Let's go find and work my way up to where they wind up in the box top I use for the current week in alphabetical order. Because since they're almost in random order anyways, I mean, I'm sure there are people who think, what's the big deal? And they're getting like probably six copies or six comics a week or whatever. I'm getting 3 or 4 dozen a week. So going through, you know, 40 or 50 comics and doing this, it takes a few minutes.
I was just counting. So, boy, I got a lot of comics this week. You get a lot more than me. I mean, I got, which makes sense because I'm down to about 100 books a month. I got about 26 books here, which is a quarter of 100. You know, you got to have like, you get like 40 or 50, you know, 45 maybe, right?
Yeah, it's usually somewhere in the 4 dozen range, give or take. I've had weeks that are getting up to about 56 or something. I'd have to go pull up that spreadsheet. Let me do that real quick, because it's, you know, easily a couple of dozen a week, and the problem I don't think is how much I'm getting. It's, I mean, granted, I am getting a lot, and this is a problem most people aren't going to have. But let's see. This past week, I got, for this shipment we're talking about, No, actually, that's next week. I've got 38 items for next week. That includes the previews. For this week, it was 54. That includes bags and boards and one or two things that I had gotten late, like the... somehow I managed to forget to order the Justice League International Annual. Fortunately, DCBS still had it and sent it to me. They're great about that kind of stuff. 39 the previous week, going back prior to that. 46 prior to that was 49. So yeah, I mean, 40 to 50 a week is pretty normal for me.
Yeah.
42 prior to that.
Lots of comics.
Yeah. But I like to read. So
indeed.
But that also, I think, you know, as we've talked about many times before, it colors our perceptions of what we're reading. I mean, for you, you're pulling back on the Batman universe. I'm still getting all of that stuff, so my views on Talon are going to be different on yours.
Yeah.
You know, likewise with the Hulk, I'm getting not only Incredible Hulk, but every other Hulk-related book out there. For something like Rachel Rising, yeah, it's a totally self-contained title, but for somebody reading maybe a dozen or two comics a month, not that hard to keep track of what's going on in any one of them.
Yeah.
Me, I'm closer to the 200 range. It's a bit harder. So, neither good nor bad, just is.
Now, what was I going to say? Oh, plugs for the previews episode that's coming up as you listen to this, hopefully within a few days of when it's coming out. The previews call will be Friday, October 12th, starting 5 p.m. Pacific, 7 p.m. Central, 8 p.m. Eastern Time. And submissions, which we have an open submission policy. We love hearing listeners, other podcasters, anyone who cares to send them in, send in short clips describing what has really excited them from the current month's previews. Those are due on Saturday morning, the 13th. And
by Saturday morning, we do mean bright and early, because yeah, I obviously can't start working on the episode until I get all those.
So if you're on the East Coast, you know, you got more latitude. If you're on the West Coast, do it by Friday night, you know, because John's in the Central Time Zone. So, you know, if you get up at 6 a.m. Eastern Time on Saturday to do it, well, you're probably going to be sending it to John before John gets up on Saturday morning. But, you know, don't get out of bed on the West Coast at 11 a.m. and then send it in because, you know, John will already be probably working on the episode by that point.
Yeah.
So, and something to think about, you know, Ian, one of the listeners, he found a really cool site last month. Puts up a digital copy of the Marvel and regular Diamond previews catalog.
Yeah, this is a full PDF of the full catalog.
Yeah. So, you know, the DCBS spreadsheet's already out. Even though I have not gotten my DCBS box yet, I downloaded those catalogs and I was able to, you know, look through and kind of do my whole order already, even as we're recording this. And the other thing is, even without that PDF catalog, I do have a thread on the forum that's got links to most of the major publishers' solicits. So, you know, we call it the preview spotlight. It does not require anybody to actually physically go out and buy the previews catalog. It just, you know, requires that you are interested in knowing what's coming out in a couple of months and kind of having a heads up about that stuff. So on the off chance that there's something cool that's not something that's almost guaranteed to be in every comic book shop, like, you know, the current issue of Spider-Man or Batman or something, you know, it's like any comic shop's going to have those in the shop, right? But there are a lot of other books out there from the big two and from indie publishers that might not show up in every comic book shop unless you ask for them. So you look through, hey, that looks cool. If it's something that, you know, is a little bit off the beaten path that looks cool to you, you might want to tell other people about it first off, so that, you know, because almost every month, you know, we both have somebody point something out that we're like, oh, that's cool. I didn't see that, right?
Well, like I was just mentioning, I forgot to order the Justice League International Annual.
Yeah.
That's a pretty high profile thing and I missed it. I mean, So that's part of why we do the previews calls. That's part of why it's great for the PDFs of these previews to be out there and stuff, why we've got the forum. Also, DCBS has the text files of what's the solicitation blurbs and stuff from previews and the Marvel previews, which is a good way for some of the back half of preview stuff to get a listing of all of that, in addition to just the here's what's on the order form. And again, the goal is to help people find comics they're going to like. You know, there's a ton of comics coming out. The previews catalog is hundreds and hundreds of pages. It's easy to miss stuff. There's plenty of things that I've gotten onto late in the game just because it hadn't hit my radar successfully. So anything you can do to help us find new titles, help other listeners and stuff find new titles, please do. It benefits everybody. It benefits you to encourage people to read a title you enjoy, because if it's getting more sales, it's going to stick around longer.
Yep.
So that pretty much do it.
Does it for me.
Cool.
Join us next week when we discuss Detective Comics number 13 from DC, Daredevil End of Days number 1 from Marvel, and Non-Humans number 1 from Image Comics.
The show notes and forum for this podcast can be found at www.comicbookpage.com under the podcast and forum sections of the website. Please email us at theguys@comicbookpage.com and let us know what you think of what was discussed in this episode. Thanks for listening.